eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy. I actually listen to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Got a little emergency type podcast today. North Carolina has gotten used to dumping news on Thursdays, and with that comes the dates for the 2020 football schedule. Got Ross Martin and Greg Barnes joining me as usual. Rate us, review us, iTunes, Spotify, however you want to do it. On YouTube, if you're watching this there, subscribe so you can get these videos ASAP when they hit. Ross, I'll come into you first. Carolina's schedule. At first blush, October appears to be a brutal stretch for the Tar Heels, but overall, I kind of like the setup.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend everybody read Greg's article up on Inside Carolina. Kind of breaks down the ebbs and flows of the schedule. But, yeah, in my opinion, it does kind of, off reputation, kind of start off easy, which you would like. Syracuse at home, and then the non-conference game, and you have a bye week. I mean, and that bye week, I think, comes a little earlier than you would like. Maybe you want to get three or four games underneath your belt, but you'll take what you get. And then you kind of have a bye week before a big stretch of seven games, and starts with BC, who, you know, new coach. We don't know exactly how good they'll be either, but then it really gets difficult with Virginia Tech, Florida State, so forth, so on. So that stretch of games in October into November, seven straight games, three on the road, it looks like. No, four on the road, three at home before an open slate before Notre Dame and Miami. That's where it gets difficult, and it closes with Notre Dame and Miami, which as Greg noted, is where I think, and obviously Greg thinks, is where kind of the ACC championship will be decided, whether that's Notre Dame, whether that's Miami, whether that's UNC, and who knows where Clemson will be at that point as well. So I think it lays out nicely for UNC with some easier games to kind of get your feet wet before the girth of the schedule begins.
Yeah, you've got those three winnable games for sure. Greg, we'll get to the end here in a second, but just looking at the notes from Carolina that are at the bottom of your article, and again, if you're watching this or listening to this and you haven't checked out Greg's article and the message board thread, you need to on Inside Carolina, but Carolina opens with a home conference game for the first time since 2003. That's hard to believe that it's been that long.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. I don't think any coaches want to start their season with a conference game if you can avoid it, just to give yourself some time to kind of work into the schedule, work out some kinks, and then be ready for conference play, because that's what matters most for sure. Different year, you know, there was some conversation earlier this week that maybe that non-conference game wouldn't ultimately go away, just because, I mean, if you look at what the other Power Five conferences were doing, they were just doing conference only. ACC Network really needed an extra game by requiring that game to be at home. That essentially gave them 15 extra games, which is why the ACC is doing it. It's about the Benjamins, as we all know. But yeah, I think in terms of how the schedule starts, you prefer to have that non-conference game first. But Syracuse, you struggled last year. I suspect they'll probably struggle again this year. It's not going to be one of the better ACC teams. And then you do have that non-conference game the second week, which I imagine will still be James Madison if they're able to fill out a schedule. If not, it may be somebody else. But you essentially have 3 weeks there to start the season, where you should win both games, and you have an extra week to prepare for, as you said, is a very tough stretch there to start October.
Yeah, I guess James Madison, is that, Greg, is that, are they the only option there, given that UConn canceled their season, or are there other names in the mix?
Well, I'm sure they're looking at all viable options. But if you look at what North Carolina has already scheduled, Auburn's out because that game's supposed to be in Georgia. Central Florida's out. The game's supposed to be in Florida. As you mentioned, Connecticut, which North Carolina would have had to pay $1.5 million to cancel that game. Connecticut's out. When you factor in that the James Madison game was scheduled for September 19th, it seems like they created that slot specifically for that game. That's me speculating, but I would imagine, as I said, if James Madison is able to have a schedule, and their situation is interesting because I guess it was the AAC decided not to have a conference season, but they allowed their individual members, if they could generate a independent schedule, they could play to try to make money. And JMU's athletic director has already said he wanted to play at least 8 games. So if they're able to make that work, then it would make sense that JMU is going to be that September 9th game. A lot of balls still in the air at this point in time, so we'll just have to wait and see.
It's crazy. Georgia Tech kind of snagged UCF and has a UCF home game versus Yellow Jackets. So they got it.
And some of the dialogue, too, and I don't know how legitimate this was, but it was the idea of, okay, so the ACC is doing 10+1. Do you essentially throw all the teams that were potential non-conference opponents for all 15 ACC schools in a pot? And you try to make that work as best you can. So as you say, Ross, that a Central Florida can play Georgia Tech. Or is it not that much of kind of a groupthink approach where you're trying to help each other out and you're trying to make things work the best for your own school? I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if we'll get that answer, but it is an interesting idea at least.
And then Liberty's playing 3 ACC teams, which was creating some buzz on Twitter today as well.
That's interesting, given Liberty's issues non-related to COVID. Looking at that UCF game, didn't Georgia Tech play UCF? Was it last year? Was it down there? So that's just basically them getting their return home game, I think. But, Ross, another, I mean, I guess a week of note for North Carolina's schedule, a lot of people are going to talk about, and it's in the middle of that October stretch, is NC State there on that weekend. I can't remember. It used to be then, because that's close to the state fair week where State and Carolina used to always play. But a lot of discussion about that game getting pulled off the back end. What you think?
Yeah, I mean that's cool. I think it's right in the middle of the season. I think there'll be a lot of attention around the ACC race at that point. UNC would already have 4 ACC games underneath their belt with Syracuse, BC, Virginia Tech, and Florida State. So, you know, they could be sitting at 3-1 or 4-0 or 2-2, and it puts a lot more attention on that state game, and then Virginia, and then Duke and Wake Forest. You have a kind of a stretch of the in-state games with Virginia added in there that makes that stretch critical. State, at that point, they may have a couple losses. They have Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Pitt, Virginia, and Duke before they play the Tar Heels. So, I mean, they could be 2-3. They could be, 3-2. They could be 0-5. Who knows? So I think it's cool how it's in the middle. I think there's going to be a little more attention because there won't be as much decided at that point. And it's in October. You know how the weather is in Chapel Hill in late October. It's going to be nice. You have the Wolfpack coming in town. And you know what? UNC basketball won't be in Hawaii yet. So if, there'll be a little bit more attention, where I think that state game at the end of the season kind of gets lost. Oftentimes, Greg and I are in the Bahamas or in Hawaii or Portland or Vegas covering the Tar Heel basketball team. And just sometimes at that point, the season's already decided, at least the ACC races. And this, I think, will be very much in it. And who knows how hot Dave Doran's seat will be at that point when the Wolfpack come into Keene Stadium.
A lot of good points there. You're right about the Thanksgiving weekend with the basketball tournaments. Greg, that being said, Notre Dame Friday night after Thanksgiving. That's potentially the biggest game on the schedule. Who knows what's going to happen with fans and all that, but is that a good time for that game to happen for this program?
Yes, absolutely. And I wish these conferences would be more upfront in terms of, hey, we're trying to schedule this in hopes of it being a primetime game. Like, this has the potential to be a tremendous game for the ACC. And I think – I think you need to be honest with that. It's okay. And if you misfire, so be it. It's not a big deal. But everybody expects Clemson to be in the ACC championship game. Could that change? Of course. You know, you never know with who's going to get sick, who's going to get hurt, all those kind of things. But as of right now, I think we're all penciling Clemson into the mix. The second team, however, we're not sure. Could be Virginia Tech, could be North Carolina. A lot of people think it's going to be Notre Dame. If Miami gets their act together because they've got Derek King, maybe they're in the mix. You know, a lot of different options there. Louisville. But by putting North Carolina and Notre Dame that Friday after Thanksgiving, at least one of those two teams will be in position for the ACC championship game. And highly likely that both of them will still be in position. So I think the fact that you've got that game scheduled then, it's a showcase game for the ACC, and it's a good thing that, you know, for North Carolina fans, that's going to be a game that matters, and it's going to be a weekend that matters for everybody. Everybody's going to be huddled around the TV. Mm-hmm. It has the potential to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's when you wish there are fans, because that Friday with Notre Dame coming to Chapel Hill, I mean, sometimes that Friday game or Saturday game after Thanksgiving gets lost in the fold because people are traveling, students are gone. I mean, that's the perfect game for all the fans to be there for the Irish coming to the Keenan Stadium. So you just wish that, but obviously it's not going to be a full stadium. So that's going to be huge. And then you look at who Clemson plays in those last games as well. They have Pitt, Virginia Tech. So the ACC, like you said, Greg, is that Virginia Tech Clemson game as the last game is a huge made-for-TV game. UNC Miami as the last game is big as well. You can kind of see what the ACC is doing, trying to line up these big, important ACC games for the later half of the schedule when something more will be on the line.
Virtually a ACC tournament there Thanksgiving weekend and afterwards to get to the ACC championship game. We'd, like you mentioned, Ross, Virginia Tech and Clemson, and then Carolina and Miami, and depending on what Notre Dame does there, it's pretty exciting time.
Hey, Tommy, what do you think it says that NC State and Georgia Tech are scheduled for December 5th?
They were planning for an empty stadium anyway, and they just it's a shopping day or something.
How hot is Dorsey? I mean, I mean he has had some good seasons there. He had 2-9-1 seasons last year. They went 4-8, 1-7 in the ACC. I mean, and with finances now, I don't think they're gonna be firing any coaches after this year.
That is the most relevant point there, Ross, for sure. But yeah. I think it was the 2016 year. You know, if they don't beat North Carolina in that season finale, all word that we had from NC State people was that he was gone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's able to beat North Carolina and he saves his rear end and then has a couple of good years. But if you look at what he's done in the ACC, I mean, his ACC schedule sucks. His record sucks.
ACC record, yeah.
Yeah, when Conference Only came out for Dave Doran, he had to be going, ugh.
Right,
exactly. And I don't think they have a quarterback. I don't think they have, unless someone gets
Devin
a
Leary.
Lot,
they're hoping Devin better. Leary, yeah, right, gets much more accurate. He's got an arm, yeah. But he doesn't know where he's throwing it sometimes.
Yeah, and they have some guys on defense, but
yeah, they got the guys they have on defense. Most of those guys are at Carolina right now. If Mike Brown is in Chapel Hill that year,
yeah, like I mean, Lee McNeil. I mean, he's getting. I mean, they definitely have some defensive line talent that are entering their like sophomore, junior years, right, Tommy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Savion Jackson.
Stuff. Yeah, local kids.
A lot of Clayton boys. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got little doubt that they're in Chapel Hill under different circumstances there. Let me talk about Johnny T-Shirt right fast. Johnny T-Shirt's our sponsor. Certainly, a great sponsors of this podcast and of Inside Carolina. We need to get out and support them. Football schedule's out. Maybe they're fans, maybe they're not, but you can still buy gear to hang out at your own personal tailgate, wear it, get it from Johnny T-Shirt online. They'll bring it to your house. What a great invention that you can order something on a computer and they deliver it to your front door. Man, these times are amazing. And then you've got Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. I saw a tweet by them earlier this week. Loaded up, ready to go for folks to come see them as students get more on campus and as fans and all and people matriculate to Chapel Hill. Visit them online. 10% off your order if you're a premium subscriber. If you're not and you listen to these podcasts, I'm not sure how, join up, get that 10%, you know, and get some recruiting news. I think people like that too. Let me break and pay the national bills. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
We're back with the Inside Carolina podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Greg Barnes and Ross Martin. Let's talk about money for a minute. And Ross, I know you were reading the letter, and Greg, we've talked about this, and you and Buck and I talked about it briefly. A letter out from Bubba Cunningham today to Rams Club members talking about the financial stress that the program is under. You know, I asked you and Buck earlier, and I guess this is something we can talk about on the air, is are colleges really on that thin of margins with this stuff? Like, is this devastating? And I mentioned the Stanford thing and those. I mean, that letter from Bubba, maybe I read it wrong at first blush, but it seemed like a call for help from the fan base. Am I looking at that the wrong way, maybe?
Can I read this right now? I mean, this is the part that stood out. The financial implications of the pandemic are serious. We face a $15 million loss in ticket revenue and a potential $30 million loss overall, even if we are allowed to fill Keenan Stadium at 30% capacity for football and the Smith Center at 50% capacity for men's basketball. If fall sports seasons and men's basketball seasons are shortened or canceled, we could lose up to $52 million in revenue, including ticket sales, sponsorship, and television revenue, conference distributions, and concession sales. Just to make sure everybody hears that. I haven't read the whole letter, so I'm actually looking at it right now.
Greg, that sounds dire, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's to be expected. I think, you know, the raw numbers that we have from 2018 is that North Carolina football brought in $40 million in revenue, had a surplus profit of $16 million. And then basketball, I think their surplus was, I want to say it was right at 15. So I believe there was about a $30 million, $31 million surplus between those two sports. And of course, that funds the other 26. So when you're, you know, let's say 30% capacity. Now, Bubba notes, as Ross said, notes that, you know, capacity levels have not yet been set. We know those numbers are fluctuating kind of behind the scenes. But if you're talking about 30% capacity, that is a significant hit to your ticket revenue. And then if you look at, you know, what the ACC network brought in last year, you know, I think Swofford said it was like a 5% hit from what they had expected. That's your TV revenue. And so you know that these are going to be challenges. And you know, I mentioned a little while ago about ACC Network really wanting that non-conference game to give them some extra inventory. That's why you want to try to hit those benchmarks for your contracts so you can pay out and help the schools. And so, yeah, it clearly is an issue. And I think that the dialogue to have is, you know, with this being a public institution, with this being a school where you're really not trying to profit, because, you know, once you start profiting, then the players have more right, I guess you could say, or at least footing to demand a share of those profits. But if you don't have that profit, the way you prevent that profit from happening, to say this another way, is you raise coaches' salaries. You raise the arms race in terms of facilities. And so if you're making money, you can keep upping the ante with how much you're paying coaches and assistants. And you, like Clemson, you're putting in a bowling alley. You're putting in a very nice slide from the third floor down to the opening door because it's cool and you need to spend the money somehow. And so because of all these things that have been built in over the years, when calamity hits and adversity hits and you have to cut back drastically, how do you do that? Do you go to the coach and say, hey, you know what? We're paying you $6 million, or your staff $6 million. We're going to need $2 million back this year. And those are conversations that you can have. You have contracts in place that make it difficult to have those conversations for 1 year. And so it is a very difficult scenario. And there's so many options that you have to kind of take a look at in terms of how can we save money? You know, do we cut schools? Do we cut sports? Do we you do hiring freezes, which is what North Carolina has done. You know, do you cut salaries? All these different things that you've got to figure out how you can make some of this money back. But it opens the door for this other conversation of, okay, like, why aren't we prepared better? Why don't we have a slush fund, essentially an emergency fund, where we could just pull from whenever we have a bad year? Different things go into that.
It's a fascinating thing, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, this is Greg's area for sure. I mean, I'm reading here they've already cut sport budgets by 10% by having a spending freeze, halting non-essential travel, and they've left 16 full-time open positions in the department unfulfilled. This is going to sound political. I mean, I don't really feel bad for these big colleges, especially a school that has 28 sports. I mean, they should start by cutting some of the sports teams that, I mean – in my opinion, it's kind of silly that UNC has 28 sports. I know that's a big part of what Bubba wants to do and stuff. But, I mean, do we need a rowing team, Tommy?
You're not getting me in that discussion.
That's right. And then I'll just say this.
I remember what Charles Carroll said.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Like, I feel bad for the hourly workers who do parking, who do concessions, who take tickets, who run security, that they use that to supplement their income. And that's probably a good portion of the money they make in the fall. And they rely on those 6-7 home games for basketball and for football. I mean, that's huge for those people that make a good amount of money on those Saturdays and basketball game days. And that's how this pandemic's really affecting people. The hourly workers who live paycheck by paycheck and now don't have this extra money in the fall and basketball season, because they're definitely going to have to cut, I guess, a lot of those positions as well, given the reduction in fans. So.
Yeah, and that's the challenge too, because 30% is what Bubba threw out capacity for Keenan. Well, let's say that the medical experts say you can't have 30%. Say it's 20%. Now you're talking about 12,000 people in the stands, and when you weigh in what you're bringing in ticket sales for those 12,000 compared to, like Ross said, all these people that you have to have in place for parking, for concessions, for ushering, for all these different things, you're pretty close to being out of wash. You're pretty close to being at a point where if the weather's not good and you only have 10,000 people show up, do you take a loss because of that threshold? Then you get into the point, well, do we have fans at all? Is it worth even having them show up? I mean, these are all very difficult conversations to have. We clearly don't have all the data available. That's why Bubba makes the money that he makes. But I don't envy anybody having to make those types of decisions.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to ask coaches to take a pay cut. But, I mean, it's tough. And the contracts make it really tough there. But, you saw what Roy did by donating $600,000. Things like that help remedy some of these issues. I mean, if each coach took a $100,000 pay cut, that could hire 4 more people.
Yeah, it's
full-time positions.
Yeah, I do not want to be the one that has to make those decisions, but I do think some of these decisions, and it's not just college sports, but schools and everything, should already been made, or at least
we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and that's what we have to realize.
Some people say, I agree with you, but let me ask you this, Greg, and I was going to ask the question. You made me forget. I was going to ask a question as far as when do those decisions, when are they made, Greg, as far as fans, as far as all that? I mean, do they just ride it up to the very end? I feel like this entire time, especially with North Carolina high school sports or whatever, these decisions are just riding up to the last possible time to make one. I mean, can you do it that way?
They're going to try. I think one of the hard things was is as we got into May and the NCAA allowed teams to return to campus, you know, on June 1st, at that point in time, it looked like all the COVID numbers were on the downward path. And I think a lot of people got comfortable and you felt like, okay, you know what? We had a bad spring season financially. As long as we get back on track for fall, we'll be okay. And there's a little blip in the road. The numbers were looking good. Everybody felt comfortable. But then when everything kind of exploded, when people started going back to living their normal lives and the trajectory of this shot back up, it blew up the whole formula. And you really put these put everybody in a bad spot, but really put these college administrators in a tough spot of being like, okay, well, if the numbers start going down again, we've got a lot more leeway with what we can do. If they don't go down at all, then we're kind of stuck in this no man's land. And if they keep going up, now we're really in trouble because we have to make money to survive. But yet the data is saying that maybe we shouldn't take this approach. And you're right. I think all you can do is kind of kick the can down the road, hope for some good news, or at least hope for some new information. But the way science works is because this is a new virus, we're learning new things. And that's why we have all these discussions. Well, today, this is the news. Tomorrow, this is going to be the news. That's how this works. We learn new things every day. And they're just waiting till they have as much information as they can possibly have to make the best decision they can. How long can they go? Who knows? The fact that we have a schedule in place now is progress. But, you know, we still got, 5 weeks before that first game. A lot can change between now and then.
Yep, it's August 6th right now, recording this. First game's September the 12th. So they got 5 weeks to figure it out. And with students coming on campus, we'll see how that works across the country. Let's be quiet and talk football. Ross, today, first day of camp, Mac Brown press conference. What are the takeaways?
Yeah, we have a lot of coverage up. We have a lot of coverage up. Hopefully by the time you started listening to this podcast, but yeah, Mac was he was moving through some stuff. I thought, what do you think, Greg? I thought he was kind of moving through a lot of topics. Yep. Wasn't as long-winded, which I think when he's not as long-winded, he's at his best because you can really get into some other stuff and he gets his point across. Major takeaways, I mean, they're trying to build depth with young players, with the shortened preseason camp and with the lack of a spring. They're kind of behind the eight ball on really getting these young players and like the redshirt freshmen, the sophomores, the incoming freshmen adjusted to what they want to do. Luckily, you know, this is the second year in the system, so they do have players who understand what they need, and that's a huge help for the Tar Heels heading into the 2020 season. We got into a lot of things, you know, offensive line, defensive line, but the key is, I mean, building a two deep so they can just roll players in and not have to play the starters, you know, 90 snaps. They want to be kind of splitting it a lot more this year. We're talking 50 snaps for the starters and then probably like 30, 40 snaps for the backups. And he really wants 22 players on offense and defense to be able to come in and play. And I think that's kind of – that was the theme of this press conference. And I'm sure Greg will get to a lot more details. And one thing was interesting that I think Greg's going to write about is what's going to happen when a group of players gets coronavirus and how do you prepare for that with second teams, with separating players, with being able to have players play on both sides of the ball if necessary at some point. Because if someone gets coronavirus on Thursday and the game's on Saturday and all of a sudden you're out three starters, what happens? And that's kind of an interesting thing to think about, to write about, to prepare for heading into this season.
Greg, that's the huge unknown there. But let me ask you this before you get into that portion of it is this summer has probably been more on the players themselves than ever. How is Mac Brown's mindset in that regard? Is he pleased with what he's seen or did he offer those opinions? Because if you didn't work on your own this summer, and granted, I understand they have program, but then you come in today and you're going to be way behind Mac Brown's thoughts on how, where his team is today going in.
Yeah, that was one thing that Mac talked about dating back to March, is that this is a scenario where if some guys thrive, you know, when it's just them and they have to take accountability for themselves, other guys need to be pushed. And we've talked about that on this podcast. All that he said the last week or two that we've talked to him is that he's pleased with how the guys came back. That Brian Hess is pleased with what they look like. So I'll take that as a good sign. I'm sure you just have to imagine when you're talking about 100-plus guys, there's some guys that probably didn't hit the benchmarks that Hess and Brown wanted. That's to be expected. But in the conversations we've had, he sounds pleased. I do think, Ross touched on this, but the fact that, North, all these schools, but you're used to having a spring season. You're used to having summer workouts with the conditioning coaches. All these different things, so that when you get to training camp, you know who's in shape. You know who knows what in terms of schematics. You've already run through the offense twice, like Phil likes to do in the spring. All these things are already in place. But now you're at training camp. And as Mac talked about today, when you got 25 new kids who have like no experience really whatsoever, yes, you've had two weeks of voluntary workouts, but it's not the same thing as what they're doing now with camp. You've got to get those guys up to speed in time for that season opener. So you've got guys that come back from last year and said, okay, we know they know what they're supposed to be doing. So do we give the younger guys more reps instead of putting so many reps on the guys that have experience? At what point do we turn our attention to Syracuse? The coaches, of course, already are, but in terms of the players, because typically what we've seen in years past is 10 to 14 days out of that season opener, you're already looking and preparing for that season opener. I mean, you're ready for that first opponent. Well, I don't know that you can do that this year. So there are a lot of different things, and it's really going to be up to the coaches to manage that as best they can to make sure your veterans and the guys that are going to play are up to speed. But you also want to make sure that if a Dez Evans, for example, is a guy you're going to have to rely on, you got to bring him along very quickly. But you got to do it efficiently to make sure that he understands what he needs to do. So this is more than anything, I think we're going to see who are the good coaches. It's easy to recruit good talent and put talent out there. But we have a very condensed window here, and it'll tell us who are legitimate coaches across the country. Because the team that plays the best early, I think those teams will have a leg up on everybody else, and that'll be primarily, yes, talent's part of it, but it'll be primarily because of the coaches did a really good job managing this tight window.
Yeah, ahead, I mean, Rose. Kind of to piggyback on that, it's going to be so interesting to see because you have so many different variables in play now. Who's in shape? Who's not in shape? How do you balance who's at what position and how many reps younger players are getting versus the veterans? He mentioned Tamon Fox. He's been in the system. He's been at Carolina for, I guess, 4 or 5 years now. And, he might not be getting as many reps as like a Dez Evans because he knows what to do, kind of keep him in shape. But you don't want to wear him down, and other players, it may be more valuable to have other players earn those reps. So, like Greg said, it's going to be interesting to see how they do this camp. And like, look, they only have, I think, 4 days of camp before classes start. Yep. And so then you're just back to regular practices. You don't get those 2 days. You don't get that period of, I think it's almost 14 days usually, of just all football, staying in a hotel room. They take a bus to camp. And they work out all day. They have meetings. They recover. They lift. They do whatever. And they take a bus back to the hotel. They don't have that this year. It's 4 days of training camp, and then classes start, and then it's a regular practice schedule. So, like Greg said, coaches, the really good coaches, will know how to work this out and figure out the right balance between rest, strength conditioning, reps, and figure out what's going to work in addition to trying to, cope and figure out this whole coronavirus thing.
And it's 4 days of camp without pads.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. The first day of full pads will be when class is in session.
You might see some really bad teams in September when it starts. Because usually the first couple of weeks anyway, everything's a little rough. But with this so much lack of preparation, no spring practice, and there's a lack of a training camp for a lot of schools, you're going to see some ugly, ugly offense and defense.
Yeah, and agreed. Greg, to close the show, I was going to ask you, is this a fair statement? I think this year's successful teams, the teams that we're talking about in December and championship level teams are going to be A, ones that have good coaching staffs, like you mentioned, but I also think B, that also have players that have bought completely in long before all this mess started. Because like Ross said, if you ain't bought in come September 12th, it ain't going to be pretty. And I think we'll see where Carolina is as far as Mac's progress in building the program he wants. Is that fair?
I think so. I think this is a good example, or will provide a good example, of the strength of a program. Because this is less about, to your point, this is less about an individual team and more about the culture behind the program. Who was doing the work in March and April? You know, and you, like Florida State, they were a mess under Willie Taggart. You had all the issues with Mike Norvell back in the spring. Or I guess it was a couple months ago. With saying he talked to players, and the players were like, no, he didn't talk to us. Having all those issues. So how is the culture there? And I think that's a big component. It also gets into not only with strength and conditioning, but what about the players with regard to like COVID-19? Mac has stressed the social distancing. Apparently, that got a little loose after some good initial weeks this summer. You had a clustering of a bunch of cases, proved problematic because they had to shut down practices for a week. You look at UNC's schedule, they got 7 weeks in a row of games. So if you have another spell where you guys get loose and they go to parties maybe they're not supposed to be at, and they spread COVID-19 around the team, well, if it's during that seven-week stretch, I mean, you're talking about potentially 2 games affected where you're not going to have key components. And so, again, that's part of the program building aspect of, are the guys listening to the coaching staff.
Let me hop in here. I mean – we may have some older listeners who haven't been to college in a long time and people that don't realize. I mean, parties are going to happen. Fraternities are rocking. Sorority girls are back. House parties are happening. The kegs are flowing. I mean, I doubt, unless you're the one who's in the library in September. I mean, I didn't open my – you don't open your books until October. So, I mean, parties are happening. And there's girls out there. There's guys out there. The alcohol is flowing, and football players can go to parties. I mean, I don't. It's gonna be tough for a Saturday night after a game or before season starts, and there's a pool party or this fraternity's having a party, and football players don't want to go. They're gonna sit in their room all day. I mean, this is 18 to 22. Like, you're not sitting in your room. You're getting out. You're meeting people. There's so much excitement in August and September and October when you're in college. And I mean, not to get to any other details here, but what's going to happen when a girl goes to a party after some fraternity and then shoots out a text to a UNC football player and says, hey, come over? There you go. There's your outbreak right there.
Right.
She's been hanging out. Maybe football team's distancing themselves, but one girl went to a party with another 30 people and a football player hangs out with that girl or whatever. This is a different scenarios. And then right there is your outbreak. And then he hangs out the next morning with the whole football team, and there it is.
So what happens next week when all the kids come back and you have classes and you've got, 15,000-20,000 people on campus, whatever it may be. And happens. Life happens, right?
I'm not worried about class. I think people mask up and they'll be distancing, but it's what happens after class on Franklin Street and in the fraternities and the house parties.
So
you can't have those two things. They're not going to work together.
I agree. And so if you have, let's say, 10% of those people pick it up because they spread it, and you end up with 2,000 people on campus, 2,000 students that have COVID-19, forget about the athletic department. What is the faculty and the administrators going to say?
Yeah. I mean, the bubble thing works. We've seen with the NBA. It seems like that works. I mean, if you want to have football, dude, put the whole football team in a hotel, close it down, and have a bus go to and from. And I mean, that's going to have to, if you really want to have football season, I think it's
virtual learning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's you talking about the bubble. Well, soccer and NBA has the bubble. They're working fine. MLB, grown men, professionals,
With tons of money and tons of, you know, they can do all the medical stuff to fix that.
And they're getting sick. So, yeah, you're right. So, basically, what we're talking about, we better figure out something to talk about mid-October. Anyway, it'll be that we'll talk about it the entire season as it goes along. But schedule's out. Camp has started. Carolina football is officially back in town. Ross Martin, Greg Barnes, I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. Listening to the Inside Carolina podcast sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt. Rate us, review us, subscribe on YouTube down below. Do all that stuff. Join us next time. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.